The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I don't know whether you've ever taken the train in. You can have the Heathrow Flyer, or you can go on the regular underground if you want to get from Heathrow to the centre of London. Alternatively, you can go in a taxi, and that can take forever and cost you a fortune. But there may be, not necessarily a cheaper, but a faster way to get from Heathrow into the City of London. I'm joined now by Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel, Airport Safety and Security Auditor. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
It's on the way, the flying taxi.
I think there's no stopping it now. And this is in the UK, close to us, not very far away. So it's a company called Vertical Aerospace, and they hope that it's Valo aircraft, a capacity for 6 passengers. They hope to get regulatory approval in 3 years, which I think is a bit ambitious, but you'd never know. They're going to ask the Civil Aviation Authority in the UK to do so, and the European Union Aviation Safety Agency, EASA, and that's the important part. So they want a type certification, but it's going to be a battery-powered aircraft, and that is a novelty in many ways.
Because they are talking about batteries using as a kind of a supplement to large passenger aircraft
yes.
going forward. We can talk about that.
Indeed, yeah,
in a
that's
little
a different
while.
Matter. This but, is a pure battery-powered aircraft.
Okay, and up to 6 people on board
yes.
or 4 people with luggage or whatever. How many engines in this thing?
Well, it'll have 6 different engines like that. So, in other words, it'll take off vertically.
Just like a drone.
It's like a big drone is what it yeah. is like that. The ambitious part, apart from getting licensing, is it's going to fly to a range of 100 miles. That's quite extensive
That'll
for a
battery. That'll get you in and out of London.
Absolutely. And it'll do a speed of up to 150 miles an hour. So it's faster than a helicopter in many ways. The point is, it'll also be useful for emergency medical services and cargo missions and that kind of thing. But getting commercial aircraft in with electric flight is going to be quite a difficult thing, because there's no history, whereas there is history with piston engines, jet engines and the whole 100 years of aviation. This is a novelty, and initially it will not be autonomous. In other words, we need a pilot on board, because we can't, you know, move 2 steps at the same
yeah.
time. We don't want aircraft crashing into each other, as might happen in a science fiction
movie. I presume, though, that they would be have avoidance technology built
that
in.
They would, yeah. That's quite easy to do in terms of transponders and that kind of thing. But also, you'd have to decide over the city, what will the authorities allow? Will it be a heliport in the normal way? Will the aircraft fly up and down the rivers, for example, which is what helicopters do now over confined airspace and that kind of thing.
So if anything goes wrong, they land in the water, not on
yeah,
the top
and
of people's
yeah,
heads.
You'd need your flying suit or your inflatable device on board. But that's probably a last-ditch effort, because the aircraft will run on, you know, 3 of the 6 engines. So there are safety features put inside, and there'll be 3 different methods of electrical conductivity. So it's not just yeah. one system.
Now, of course, the batteries are probably going to be some variation on lithium ion.
Yes,
so
indeed.
The question about lithium fires and all of that will raise its head. But then when you think you're in a jet aircraft,
it's been solved, yeah. And in fact, we can go back to an aircraft I had great fondness for. I mentioned before the Boeing 787. You might remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I was very impressed to see the first one I saw from Ethiopia in Dulles Airport in Washington. And 3 weeks later, it was parked in Heathrow in the normal way for reloading, and it self-ignited. And the fire crew had a heck of a job putting the fire out, because it just gets hotter and hotter in that regard. But Boeing have solved that problem still, and it's not a problem anymore.
But when you worry about if something going up in flames, when you consider when you take off with any aircraft,
yes.
be it a humble 737 or whatever,
yeah.
there's so much fuel on board that could
80 metric tons, in some cases 100 metric tons of what is a flammable stuff, and it takes off in the normal way, and it's a bit of a miracle, but it's remarkably rare to have an aircraft fire in that regard.
Now let's talk about electrical power
yes.
as a supplement.
Yeah. It's going to happen slowly, very slowly. You see, we burn fuel, of course, in the normal turbine engines like that. But they're suggesting now we could put in electrical power to help the turbines work. And you'd have no problem with the front engine fan, because that's dealing with cold air. Much more difficult in the middle and the second and third spools, if they have them in the turbofans, because putting electrical power in there, not a big problem, except it gets so hot. Do electrical motors work in 600 degrees centigrade? Not yet is the answer like that. But if you could do it, you could go a long way to going towards the energy efficiency of perhaps a 200-seater that you mentioned, an Airbus or a 737. They use 45 megawatts when you do it. Now, I knew what that was in horsepower, but that's an awful lot of electricity, Pat. When you move on to a bigger aircraft, maybe a 400-seater going a long distance, which might be going to New York or Dubai, whatever it might be, they need between 80 and 100 megawatts. That's an awful lot of energy for a flight like that. So what kind of batteries would do that? What kind of engine power would you
not
need?
Not possible.
Right. Not at the moment like that, but they'll start with hybrid jet engines, and that's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years in that regard. So we'll have very efficient jet engines assisted by electrical power, and in the long term, I'm predicting that we might have hydrogen generators on board, which would in fact fire up and pay and play with the engines. So the turbines would be turned by electrical power and not by fuel at all.
Now, let's move on to military air safety. I mean, there was an episode off the coast of Venezuela,
yes,
which is very worrying.
It was a big shock because there was a regular flight. JetBlue Aviation is a commercial aircraft. It's from going back to New York from a place called Curacao, or Curacao is how they pronounce it. It's an island off Venezuela, in Venezuelan airspace. And the pilots come back to New York, it's an American airline, were forced to stop the climb, having been given clearance from air traffic control, and said, please, there's an air tanker in the way which looks grey, you know. And air traffic control said, nothing on our screen because there's no transponder. So they had to take avoidance action, stop the climb and move. And they were quite upset about it.
Now, don't forget, the Trump administration had said, we are closing all Venezuelan airspace to all commercial traffic.
And yet it's an American aircraft going to and from New York, a city well known to Mr. Trump. So I found that extraordinary. But it turns out that they have a regulation in America, federal law, which allows military aircraft in training flights to switch off the transponders. But a 2019 law, which I didn't know about, says if there's a commercial, or I beg your pardon, a security aspect to the flight, they can switch off the transponders as well. And this is what the case would be. So you had a military aircraft, a tanker, flying around somebody else's airspace with the transponder turned off, which is what we complained about when the Russians did it, you know.
And we know there's a lot of increased air activity.
Absolutely.
Helicopters off the coast of Venezuela as they pirate those.
Indeed. It's a naval operation out there, and there's an aircraft carrier out there somewhere, and a submarine as well. So there's a task force off Venezuela. I think the next thing might be an invasion, but that's only speculation from that point of view.
Now, they've been looking back on that Potomac air accident, and what have they learned? Because this was a case where you've got very busy airspace,
yes,
and military and commercial traffic intersecting.
And for years they were flying the visual at night, helicopters down, up and down the Potomac. But only the US Army was doing it then. Apparently there had been 85 incidents in the previous 4 years, which is a lot. But the law was not changed in that regard. The Army helicopter, the Black Hawk, with three people on board, was flying 100 feet above its authorized flight level. But when they analysed the altimeters, they said, that's not unusual. In other words, they could have been at 400 feet on their altimeter, but they were at 500 feet or whatever the figure was.
So the altimeter is not accurate?
No. They should have been using radar altimeter, in my opinion, over the water, you know, but they didn't. They had a fixed procedure, and you get away with these things as long as you don't pair it too much. But they did, and made a mistake and had a mid-air collision in that regard. And they want the law changed so that military aircraft in this kind of airspace could use automatic dependent surveillance broadcasting system. In other words, they would turn on the transponders, and the US forces have said no, and the president says no, we're going to continue with our original system, and we will do basically what we like, even though the Airline Pilots Association said this is leaving us in an unsafe environment in different parts of the states.
Extraordinary, isn't it?
Incredible.
I mean, even the safety of their own people,
indeed,
their own civil
indeed.
Servants, their own congressmen and women, you know, coming and going.
Indeed.
Oh, okay. Kevin, thank you very much for all of that. Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.